Welcome to the all-access version of the ProWrestling.net podcast. Today is Tuesday, July 6th. I'm so tempted to say Monday. It definitely feels like a Monday after the long holiday weekend. Hope everyone out there had a very safe and happy 4th of July weekend or Canada Day, depending on where you live. And if you're overseas, well, I hope you just had a good weekend. But we're here to talk about the WWE Raw show that took place on Monday night in Nashville, Tennessee. Before I get into that, I want to give you a quick plug for the .net members website. If you like audio, you would love the members site because we've got a ton of it over there. Two weekly Q&A series. Richard Quilling and I split those up. We go for about an hour each answering the .net members pro wrestling questions, throwing some non-wrestling related fun. Or non-related fun, I guess, at the end of the thing. And we also have the .net weekly show in which we run through all the news of the week and break down whatever the big story is, and also include a lot of tidbits that have not been reported elsewhere. And we also have reviews of the WWE and TNA pay-per-views. Rich Quilling and Johnny Fairplay of Survivor fame got together on, I guess it was 4th of July, working on the holiday, and recorded about 50 minutes on the UFC pay-per-view. So if you like Johnny Fairplay, or you love to hate him, he is available for 15 minutes in the audio section. And you can sign up for as cheap as $5.50 a month. And all you have to do if you're listening on iTunes is head over to ProWrestling.net and look for the sign-up area, and you will gain almost instant access, I should say, to the member site. And one nice part about the member site is it is ad-free. So if you're not a fan of advertising on websites, you can basically erase all that by becoming a ProWrestling.net member today. Having said that, a couple more things to plug. I will be on the PW Torch live cast this afternoon, so if you don't get your fill of me here, you can listen to that. It is available at blogtalkradio.com, and you are welcome to call in and ask me and host Wade Keller of the Torch anything you want to. I'm not sure exactly what the topic will be. Probably, I'm guessing, a lot of Raw talk today. And I will also be appearing on Between the Ropes. You can listen to that one live at BetweenTheRopes.com. Also scheduled for that show, that is hosted by Brian Fritz, is an interview with Dusty Rhodes, as well as TNA wrestler Chris Sabin. So a lot going on in Between the Ropes. And again, that one starts, I believe, at 5 Central. I'll be on the show about 6:20 Central. And you can always catch the replay of that show at BetweenTheRopes.com starting on, I think, usually Wednesday morning, Fritzy gets it up. Now, with all that stuff out of the way, let's jump into the WWE Raw show. As I said, it took place in Nashville. I thought this was a strong edition of Raw. It wasn't a memorable show that we'll be talking about weeks or months from now, but it was a good quality performance from WWE. I really like what they did with the Nexus angle. Very happy to see Wade Barrett back. I was so worried about the future of this angle, if Wade Barrett was going to be out long-term with his work visa issues. For those who don't know, that's why he was not on the show last week, as both he and Drew McIntyre had work visa issues, and there were some online reports that the creative team had been told at one point not to plan on having access to those guys until sometime after SummerSlam. Fortunately, that didn't turn out to be the case, as both guys are back. Wade Barrett returning on Raw, and Drew McIntyre made an appearance at the SmackDown House show on Monday night. So it looks like that situation has been settled, and boy, did the Nexus need it, because Barrett is, at this point, their best in-ring performer. Bryan Danielson, obviously, out of the picture. And Barrett is also, I think, their best stick man. I think he's very good on the mic and really has been positioned as the leader of this thing, at least until the anonymous general manager is revealed. So it was great to see him back. I'm going to kind of breeze through. We'll use the report I did last night on ProWrestling.net as the outline for this. If you want to follow along, just head on over to ProWrestling.net, and you'll see my live coverage review. You can actually access it right there in the featured article section. We got the NXT 7 were already in the ring, or I guess the Nexus, as they're now known, and Barrett was standing in the middle of the group, and they were there basically to take their punishment from the anonymous general manager. Barrett, I like some of the things they had him say. He said it's all part of a bigger picture, a much bigger picture, regarding the attack on Vince McMahon. And he added that Vince thought he controlled them, but that is not the case. He turned it over to Skip Sheffield, who talked about Ricky Steamboat and the other legends being attacked last week, and he said, we found a loophole in the GM's ruling, and we exploited it. And they basically said that they did this just for fun. You know, the Vince McMahon thing was part of a much bigger picture, whereas attacking the legends was just for fun. Sheffield said that more people are now interested in Steamboat's DVD than they were before Nexus, and he said that Steamboat should be thanking them. And then the email chimed twice, and they've added a new touch to this. They keep beefing up the podium that Michael Cole goes to read off the anonymous general manager's emails, and so they beefed that up. The podium has its own logo now for anonymous GM, and I think there's a Raw logo on the back of the MacBook Pro that they're using. And now, when the email chimes, it chimes twice, and every time it chimes, the lights flicker in sync with the chimes. So Michael Cole stood at the anonymous general manager podium and read the punishment, which is that they are not allowed to challenge for titles until further notice, and the GM also lifted the ban on Raw and NXT wrestlers having physical contact with one another. That one was put into effect the week before. Again, a nice little thing where it makes it seem like the general manager isn't necessarily with the Nexus wrestlers, because you know, he's saying they can't challenge for titles until further notice. Well, I mean, they can challenge whenever the heck they want to, basically, in the sense that if my, and I think everyone's guess is correct, that the general manager is really leading this Nexus thing, well, all he has to do is say, now's, you know, here's your notice. You know, you go ahead and challenge for that title. So, you know, I think most people assume that's the case anyway. John Cena's music played. He came out and said the Nexus wrestlers have done a lot since they've arrived in WWE, but they've yet to have a fair fight. He called for a 7-on-7 match. Randy Orton, R-Truth, Evan Bourne, the Hart Dynasty, and John Morrison walked out and followed Cena to the ring before Cena's clan could get there. They were actually jumped from behind by Sheamus, Edge, Chris Jericho, the Uso brothers, Miz, and Ted DiBiase. Cena's crew ended up clearing the Raw heels from the ring. Cena got pissed and said that they had the Nexus wrestlers where they wanted them. The Nexus guys had fled by this point. And Sheamus says he doesn't know what the Nexus agenda is, but he said he and the others, heels that he was with, support the agenda if it means taking out Cena and Bret Hart. So there's your Bret Hart mention. So clearly he and WWE are, you wouldn't think they're on bad terms at this point, given that they actually mentioned his name. A lot of times if WWE doesn't like someone, they'll either have, you know, talk smack about them or just won't mention them at all. And I don't get the case that there's any ill will right now. Sheamus recalled Cena asking him to join the fight. He said he and the other wrestlers on the stage with him decline. Orton took the mic and said he and Sheamus are not friends and probably never will be. Or Cena, I'm sorry, are not friends. I never will be unless they have to be. Orton asked Edge if he remembered when the Nexus attacked them at the pay-per-view. Orton suggested that the 7 Raw heels and 7 Raw babyfaces face each other on the spot. And that's when the email chimed again. Cole stood up and said the general manager wouldn't let them face off. He said the Money in the Bank ladder match participants would meet in a series of matches. And he also said Cena and Barrett would meet in the ring to shake hands and call a truce. Cena looked at the camera and instead of shaking hands, he could make a fist and knock Barrett's teeth out. The GM said that through Cole, of course, said he needs Cena to be the bigger man and trust that he would do the right thing. Cole said Cena failing to do so would lead to appropriate consequences, and then the GM concluded with, and that's the bottom line because the GM said so. So there's your likely red herring moment. You know, we're all supposed to think it's Stone Cold Steve Austin. There was another one of those later on in the night. For some reason, this led to a bunch of emails being sent my way, where everyone assumes now that for some reason, because they were teasing Steve Austin, that it's actually The Rock. I don't know how those things are related necessarily. Everyone's, you know, quick to point out that, well, you know, he did say he wanted to do something more than just host the show this summer. Hey, it would be awesome if they could. Here's my concern with that, though. I don't foresee Dwayne Johnson coming back for more than a week or two. And granted, you know, he can do this anonymous GM thing. He doesn't always have to be there. And they can just make, you know, he can continue to do his thing from home, and they can imply that it's him, I guess. But I just don't know that he wants to make a commitment where he's even a semi-regular performer on the WWE show. And if he's not willing to wrestle, where's your payoff? Now, if they actually got him to wrestle, this would be huge. Of course, this would be great because you'd have this long build toward Dwayne Johnson being revealed as this mystery man who's been behind all these attacks, and then he can cut the promo of his life, which we know he can, on John Cena and why he's doing this and everything else, and it would set up one hell of a Cena versus Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock showdown. But I don't know. I hope I'm wrong, but it still seems like wishful thinking to me. But again, it would be one hell of a coup for WWE if they could pull that one off. Ted DiBiase defeated John Morrison in 3:25. Maurice was with Ted. She sat in on commentary for the match. I can't say I really like that. It gave the announcers a chance to talk to her about being a gold digger, and she's taking phone calls during the match, and I guess it helped Maurice get herself over a little bit, but it kind of distracted me from the match more than anything, and I think the focus should be on what was going on in the ring, just personal opinion. Morrison was distracted by Maurice and took a thumb to the eye. He was actually distracted by her because she put on his fur coat. And I'm all for Ted DiBiase actually getting some wins because, he's been going like every other week now. He either gets a win at this level where it's not like the focus of the show or anything like that, but it's a decent win, or he's made to look like an idiot and lose to, there's no shame in losing that 8-man tag that they did last week, the mega match, if you recall, the 8-man tag billing and all the hype they gave that. It wasn't the type of loss that anyone was going to remember down the road, but still, I want to see them develop some type of momentum with DiBiase. So hopefully this is the first of several wins in a row for him. Morrison just kind of lost in the shuffle. They don't really seem to know what they want to do with him. Yeah, he's, part of John Cena's crew that runs out to fend off the Nexus guys, but that's about all. And then I thought they made him look really bad. It's like you're more concerned with your ring coat, your fur coat, because Maurice is wearing it than you are winning the match. Wow. Didn't like that. And so because he was distracted by this, DiBiase got to hit the Dream Street and got the pin. Then we got Santino Marella backstage with Vladimir Kozlov saying, Italy and the Russians were back together again. It's just like World War II, except this time no Nazis. Don't call me crazy. I just don't even want to hear Nazis mentioned on a PG program. I don't even like the fact that the show is PG, but I certainly understand why it is. And I don't know. It didn't make me laugh. But then again, Santino hasn't made me laugh in a long, long time. I don't know if it's the writing or if he's just, he's run out of his own material. I don't know what it is, but Santino just, the thrill is gone for me with Santino, and it's not like he couldn't do something next week to crack me up and get it back, but it's been a while since he's done that. Kozlov did say that if they lost their tag match, he would pound his fist into Santino's face, and then we got some video package stuff, and then Santino and Vladimir came out for their match after commercial break, and Regal came out, William Regal, saying that he used his power of persuasion to get himself a monster. And this led to Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov defeating the team of William Regal and the great Kali. Yes, Ranjan Singh was with Kali. The announcers, Singh looked like business as usual. If you recall last week, he had that promo where he was translating what Kali was saying and acting like Kali would run away from the Nexus and just badmouthing his storyline brother and acting like it was things Kali was saying before he then stormed off. So they were like teasing some kind of heel turn for Ranjan Singh. Well, this week the announcers just played it up as, Ranjan was basically trying to light a fire under Kali and get him to be more aggressive. Okay. I would complain. I think it's still going because, the fact is Regal did team with Kali. And so my guess is that Ranjan is, if they ever decide to follow up on this, will be the guy who kind of set that up. So he looked like a baby face. But, he and Kali were aligned with the heel, so that thing might still be going. Maybe they nipped that one in the bud and just realized that, no one really cares if Ranjan Singh turns heel. I don't know what's going on with that, and frankly, I don't care. We've already spent too much time on it. Speaking of things they need to spend time on, they have T-shirts with Santino Marella doing this Cobra thing, and he teases it, and it's like a minimal part of the crowd is into it because they've never really established this thing. I know they've done it a couple times in skits here and there, But, I mean, they really need to, if you're going to sell T-shirts with this thing and try to get people excited about it, do more with it, you know, set it up somehow. And it just feels like I missed an episode of Raw, which I did not. If they've done it on Superstars, I think most people are in my boat. What happens on Superstars stays on Superstars, and you're going to have to reintroduce it on Raw. This one, though, you know, Santino took the beating, and then Kozlov ended up picking up the win over Regal. Kali never entered the match, and then afterward he had the babyface duo pick up Kali just so he could chop him. And then Kali and Ranjan danced with Santino while Kozlov stood there and shook his head kind of in disgust, kind of like I was about that point. Just nothing funny about this. These are supposed to be comedy guys, and the writing for the comedy guys just has been very mediocre. Then we got, after a commercial break, we did get Jerry Lawler delivering a brief promo about the Nexus and talking about how, you know, he was brought up to respect the guys who came before him, and they didn't do that, and that they attacked Ricky Steamboat and the Legends for fun, and so that makes them a bunch of punks. And we got a highlight package. They had a lot of short highlight packages kind of with the Nexus guys attacking Legends and John Cena and stuff like that. Brief but effective. And then we got Josh Matthews interviewing Arn Anderson, who completely made me forget about Jerry Lawler's promo. I thought Lawler's promo was solid, and then Anderson comes on. He was acting like he was fighting back tears after watching the video, which was probably a little much, but Anderson did say that Steamboat is bad. He said Steamboat is 57 years old, and Sheamus then approached Anderson from behind and said, and Anderson told Matthews he might want to leave. Sheamus said Anderson used to be the enforcer, but now he's just a pathetic old man, and Anderson said he used to be a lot of things, but he was never blind nor stupid. Do you understand what's happening to your company, Anderson asked? Don't you know what hostile takeover means? Don't you know that even though you're the champion, you're not safe? Anderson told Sheamus and his group to put their egos aside or the company will go up in smoke. Sheamus said he doesn't have any weaknesses. Sheamus said the Nexus is smarter than the Four Horsemen ever were because they know not to interfere with his business. Anderson told him to keep thinking that and once again advised him to get on the same page with Cena and his crew. Anderson was very effective here. You know, the hostile takeover line, sure, those of us who lived through the NWO, you know, remember that, and I'm guessing that's why they did it, just kind of, you know, plant that line in people's heads again that the Nexus is similar to the NWO without coming out and saying it, and I liked it. You know, it's like, okay, this is, Anderson is, one, he's a great promo, and two, he's respected, and so this coming from him, it's not like Santino out there talking about a hostile takeover. This is Arn Anderson, who's been through this before in another company, and here he is delivering this line. I thought it was very effective, very well done. We got a history piece recapping the Lex Express campaign. For those of you not old enough to remember that, don't buy into the hype. This was brutal. They did show footage of Luger slamming Yokozuna on July 4th, 1993. That was pretty much the peak of that entire angle. Lex Luger really was a bomb in WWE, both as a heel and a babyface even. Miz and R-Truth never got started. Truth's entrance was joined in progress. Miz went for his version of R-Truth's theme song again. This one was better. And to, you know, it's, I know a lot of us are probably going, man, it's the Miz. He should be funnier on that. Good for him for not showing up R-Truth. I mean, what is there to R-Truth? Let's be honest. There's this entrance song and, yeah. So if Miz mocks that, gets the crowd to turn on it, what's left for R-Truth? There you go. So he's not being the cool heel. He's going for heat here. I think he should just abandon ship. It was better than the first time, but that's not saying anything. I'd rather just not see him spoof it anymore because it's not funny and it's really not generating a lot of heat. But at least he's trying to generate heat, I guess, is the point. This turned out to be just a beatdown. Miz took Truth to ringside and attacked him and was targeting his arm. He wrenched it over the bottom rope at one point, and eventually the trainers had to come out to tend to R-Truth at ringside. Miz took the mic and asked whether it hurt, and he said, good, that's exactly what I wanted it to do. And he said that will happen to anyone who steps in the ring with him. He says, I'm going to make it hurt. He was very calm, cool, and Chris Jericho-like, and I mean that in a good way. Because Miz right now is a character that is just over the top, more entertaining than anything. It gets under people's skins. I think for Miz fans, it's very entertaining. For the heel haters, it's easy to hate Miz. You know, like I say, he gets under their skin. And this was kind of different, though. You know, he actually developed a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for? Credibility in terms of being more than just a guy that goes in there and gets bounced around and might win in a fluky manner. Now they're starting to establish that this guy's got a little bit of a mean streak. He can be vicious. It's not just will he get his ass kicked or will he win on a fluke. Now they're starting to give him some in-ring credibility. So I don't know what's going on with Truth. I'm still waiting to find out on that. They did announce that he is out of Money in the Bank. And the first, you know, two things come to mind when I hear that. When I hear that a guy has suddenly been pulled from a match that he was advertised for. Well, a few things do. One, is he hurt? You know, I mean, it's possibly had an injury that he was able to work through and is going to have surgery and miss time. Again, this is all speculation, so don't take any of this as fact. Was he suspended? I mean, you got to throw that out there as a possibility when something abrupt like this happens. And these guys do have, WWE does have the right to use them to kind of blow them off television if they want to. Was it just to open up another slot? Did they just decide to go in a different direction and thought we need to do an injury angle? We're going to put Triple H or whoever. You know, it doesn't have to be Hunter. Whoever they want to put in that match, now they can. It could be for that reason. So I'm not sure what's going on with R-Truth and why he is out of the Money in the Bank match. I can't say it, you know, it probably increases my level of interest in that match now, just because R-Truth was probably the guy in there that I wanted to win least and just didn't do anything for me. So, you know, we'll see who they replace him with. I threw out Triple H as a possibility, because if they do want to get to Sheamus versus Hunter at SummerSlam, well, Hunter winning this match, yeah, it would piss off a lot of net fans, but it would give them the explanation for why he gets to return and get that title match right away. Not that they always need one. It's WWE and it's Triple H, and I think people are at the point where if Hunter gets that match, the casual fans out there are just going to accept that, you know, he's Hunter, he's earned it. And, well, the internet fans will cringe and go, God, not again. But anyway, then we went to more NXT footage. We got Edge coming out for his Cutting Edge segment. He called for a moment of silence for R-Truth. He only knew one song, but he did it oh so well, Edge said. That was the line of the night. That one absolutely cracked me up. Edge recalled the Nexus wrestlers attacking him and Orton and questioned whether he should let it slide. He said he could use seven allies who could help him win the Money in the Bank match. Edge said the person who wins that match always goes on to become champion. And he talked about how he's done it twice, whereas Bourne and Jericho have yet to do that. Then he actually introduced Evan Bourne, but instead Chris Jericho's music played, and he headed to the ring in his gear. And said he doesn't take a backseat to Bourne or Edge. Said Edge was pandering to Nexus in hopes that they wouldn't attack him again. Jericho pointed out that he was actually Wade Barrett's mentor on NXT and said he'd like to think he's the cause of all the Nexus chaos because of the advice he gave Barrett about making an impact. Nice touch. Another little tease that maybe it's Jericho, which, you know, a lot of us have speculated it could be. I don't think it's going to be. I think this has become... I'd be fine if it was, because I think, but they kind of played on the obvious part, and usually if, you know, they would kind of keep, you'd think they'd kind of keep that quiet. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Jericho ends up, taking a Nexus beatdown at some point. Possible. But because he said that and made the obvious connection for everyone, now I kind of doubt that he's going to be revealed as the mystery guy. But then we got Edge questioning why Nexus would listen to a guy who barely beat Evan Bourne 2 weeks ago. I didn't like that line. Just like, there's no shame in losing to Evan Bourne. But then the more I thought about it, it's like, you know, okay, it doesn't make Bourne sound great, but it's something two heels would say to one another, so I can live with it. It doesn't have to be said, but I could live with it, especially since I came back and made, you know, Bourne look good later on anyway. They just kind of went back and forth in a really good verbal sparring session between the two, and Jericho talking about how Edge clearly idolizes him and started wearing his hair long because of him and having his own talk shows because of him. And Jericho referring to himself as the most valuable performer in WWE and said he can't be replaced. Jericho vowed to win Money in the Bank, become champion, and make sure that Edge never gets another shot. Edge took a shot at Jericho and beat him down in the corner. Jericho came back and applied the walls to Jericho, but Evan Bourne ran out and attacked him. Edge and Jericho then were trying to work together to go after Bourne, who used his quickness to elude them and then flew to ringside. The email chime occurred again, and the lights flickered. Michael Cole stood up and said, the GM was telling the fans that if they want to see some action, they should give them a hell yeah. So there's your Steve Austin tease again. The GM booked Edge and Jericho versus Bourne and Randy Orton. And then they went to commercial. When they came back, it was Orton and Evan Bourne beating the team of Jericho and Edge in 1540. Best match of the night. There wasn't a whole lot of wrestling on this show, but they actually gave us 15 minutes and 40 seconds of quality action here. And the finish, I was kind of concerned. I'm like, wow, it's, you know, Evan Bourne gets his win. He ended up hitting the Shooting Star Press on Jericho and got the clean pin. I was kind of hoping it would be Edge just because of what Edge had said about Bourne, but instead it turned out that, they're going to keep this Bourne and Jericho thing going, which is fine. Edge actually headed backstage. He speared his own partner and then headed backstage, and that's when Bourne was able to hit the Shooting Star Press on Jericho. And then after the match, Bourne was celebrating with Orton, who nailed him with the RKO. I like that. It's straight out of the Steve Austin playbook, but it was needed here because, you know, the spotlight was on Bourne. Orton was just kind of another wrestler in the match. But then that final image of Randy kind of reigning supreme over everybody was very well done. And kind of reminds everybody that Orton is kind of a wild card and you never know what's going to happen with him. And so I like this. I wouldn't have liked it if they had left that part out just because, Randy shouldn't all of a sudden be the buddy of all the baby faces. He's just not that kind of character. It would kind of go against what they've done with him for so long is kind of this... again, kind of a wild card. Never know what you're going to get from Randy. Then we got a video recap of the Nexus roughing up John Cena. We got a shot of Randy Orton backstage where he spotted David Otunga, Heath Slater, and Michael Tarver. Otunga tried to explain why they interrupted the Fatal 4-Way match. Orton said that that was his chance to win the WWE Championship. Michael Tarver said they were trying to make a statement that night and are trying to apologize here. Otunga insinuated that they could either help Orton win Money in the Bank or make sure he never cashes in successfully if he wants to engage in a holy war with them. This will be the next thing that gets somebody from NXT fired or the Nexus group fired probably. Yeah, I'm preaching. He told them to think about that the next time Cena tries to recruit him. And Orton responded by saying, okay, I heard what you had to say. Now get out of my face. So Orton not committing either way, which he shouldn't. I like that. And if you notice, I don't believe Orton, it could be wrong, but I don't think Orton ran out later in the night. I guess we'll get to that part. And if he didn't, good move. If he did, bad move, because Orton should tease kind of where his, who he's aligned with at this point. And kind of, is it, even if it's just, well, he's not with Nexus, but he might be his own man and might not want to get involved in this mess. That kind of thing, so that whenever he does run out to help Cena and company, it means something. People react to that. The announcer stated, let me back up there. It's a shame they had Orton get involved from the start and kind of, come running out for Cena a couple times now because, it should have been a mega moment when Orton, this lone wolf guy, lone wolf character actually comes out to help his longtime rival. That's something that could have been saved. It was at this point the announcer stated that R-Truth would not be able to take part in the Money in the Bank match, so there is now that opening, and they ran through the rest of the advertised matches. They didn't announce any new matches here, but right afterward we got Josh Matthews announcing that the anonymous general manager had ruled that the Hart Dynasty would defend the unified tag titles against the Uso brothers at Money in the Bank, and Matthews called for the Uso brothers to come on to the interview set with Tamina. Jimmy ended up betting his brother $1,000 that Josh wouldn't know which one of them was Jimmy and which was Jay, and Jimmy won the bet because Matthews had no idea, and, can't blame Matthews. I'm sure it was scripted anyway, of course, but I couldn't blame Josh if this was a shoot because I have no clue which one is which at this point, so I'm trying to figure that out. I know who Tamina is, but after the Uso brothers left, Alicia Fox tapped Josh on the shoulder and pointed out that she hadn't even been interviewed since she won the Divas Championship. She said it wasn't a fluke that she went home with the title at the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, and she said she'd prove that in her match against Eve. And then they went to commercial and they came back. We got SummerSlam recall footage of Davey Boy Smith beating Bret Hart in their classic match at Wembley Stadium. So we're starting to get some SummerSlam recall stuff, even though Money in the Bank is still to go. I don't mind this. You should establish that SummerSlam is, you know, arguably your second biggest pay-per-view of the year. I would say Royal Rumble, but I mean, there's nothing wrong with trying to brand SummerSlam as that WrestleMania of the summer type of event. You know, there's only one WrestleMania, but you know what I mean, that really big summer spectacular event, one of WWE's marquee shows. I think it's a good move on their part, and I think the build, frankly, for the Money in the Bank has been strong enough that they can get away with doing that. They don't have to just hold out and, well, we don't want to remind people SummerSlam's coming up because we've got this pay-per-view. I think there's a chance that, you know, you're going to get, I don't think there's a good chance that people are going to go, oh, that's right, SummerSlam's coming, I'm not going to order Money in the Bank. Alicia Fox came out, and the announcers were narrating footage of her title win, and then she pinned Eve Torres to retain the Divas Championship in 1:25. Alicia was feigning an ankle injury that I think everyone in the arena and everyone watching at home knew was fake, other than Eve. Eve ended up, just getting hit, and after she stopped faking the injury, and then Fox hit her finisher, which I think is essentially the rocker dropper to get the pin. So I guess flavor of the month, Eve, has been replaced by July's flavor of the month, Alicia Fox. And we'll find out who is next as flavor of the month in the Divas division when they inevitably switch the title, and no one will care. Come, you know, maybe SummerSlam, I guess sometime. I'm guessing we'll see a title change. And is Melina still on this brand? Because I know she's supposed to come back around SummerSlam, so maybe that's the idea. I've always liked Melina more as a heel, but it doesn't even matter anymore. I mean, the Divas is just, it's such a wasted division. It's such a shame. More Nexus videos, and we got Cole saying he'd been informed by the anonymous GM that Randy Orton would face Edge on next week's show, so they're keeping that one going. That's a nice main event, except it's not the main event, as we found out later. At least I don't, well, one of them, I guess, maybe it's a double main event. I always love that. Wade Barrett came out and recalled the anonymous GM requesting that he and John Cena shake hands and call a truce, and he said he wasn't going to sugarcoat what the Nexus had done to Cena. But he said everything they'd done had a purpose, and he said it's just unfortunate that Cena was caught in the middle of it, and he invited Cena to come out and shake his hand. Cena came out, walked onto the stage, and actually looked around kind of behind the corner of the set to make sure he wasn't about to be jumped. I like that. And Barrett said they've caused Cena a lot of harm and cost him his WWE Championship. However, he said Cena is not in the Nexus's future plans. Barrett said the Nexus 7 will be around for a long time, and they could make Cena's life very easy or very hard. And he left that choice to Cena, who questioned whether everything would stop if they just shook hands. Cena said he knows the general manager wants the truce, but he wants to make sure Barrett wants it also. And then Cena said he wanted Barrett's word that if he shook his hand, it would all stop. Cena stuck his hand out, and Barrett went to shake it, only to have Cena pull it back. Why stop now when we're having so much fun? Cena said in his big over-the-top way with a big smile. I'm like, oh, no, they're going to wreck it. Because everything had been serious and everything had been well done. And then Cena has the big smile and he's all fun and games. I'm like, oh, no. Cena said Barrett could take his short-term, long-term, and all other plans and shove them up his Nexus. And a nice line. Cena said that he's going to take down every member of the Nexus, whether I have help, whether I do it myself. I get to every single one of you. That is the future, and you've got my word on it, he said. And then so he was getting nice and intense here. My concerns about him going happy-go-lucky and over the top and being annoying were ill-founded, because he got right back on track and actually delivered one of his an intense promo and eventually an intense beatdown that we'll get to. As Cena was leaving the ring, Barrett stopped him by saying that everything they've done to Cena so far could be worse if they wanted to. Shake my hand or I promise you are going to face some very, very severe consequences. Oh, I'm sorry, I backed up a little. Oh, no, Cena then approached him and shook his hand. When Barrett tried to walk away, Cena pulled him in and went for the attitude adjustment. The rest of the Nexus hit the ring and attacked Cena. Evan Bourne ran out and was quickly outnumbered. John Morrison followed and was quickly outnumbered. Then Mark Henry's music played, and out came the heroes of the WWE Superstar television show that airs Thursday nights on WGN America that most people don't watch. And it was Santino Marella, Goldust, Vladimir Kozlov, Great Khali, Yoshitatsu, and the Hart Dynasty running out to help out Cena. The Raw babyfaces all cleared Nexus from the ring, but Young was left behind with Cena. The lights flickered as the email chime sounded. Cole stood up and read the latest email, which is that if it didn't stop now, there would be consequences. Cena applied the STF on Darren Young in the middle of the ring. The chime sounded again, and Cole announced that because of Cena's actions, the general manager had ruled Cena would face all seven members of the Nexus in a handicap match on next week's Raw. Cena wasn't happy, and he took it out on Young by roughing him up, and Cena paced around the ring and then stopped Young from escaping. He threw Young through the ropes and into the ring post. Young tumbled to the floor. Cena was seething in the ring. He headed back to ringside, took the ring steps apart, and actually threw the top piece at Young. And then Cena picked up Young again, threw him over the announcer's table. Cole and Lawler scrambled out of the way, and then Cena actually pushed the announcer's table on top of Young and headed back to the ring to pose for the fans to close the show. And Cena held up his fingers to signify it would now be 6-on-1 because he'd taken out Darren Young. So 6-on-1 handicap match for next week with Cena against the Nexus, plus Edge versus Randy Orton. I love it when WWE starts to hype matches for the following week. I just think it makes sense, and there's too many times when they don't do that. I think they book on the fly too much to actually do that, and but this is not one of those times. At least they kind of know where they're going next week, and it gives fans a little something to look forward to. Let's, you know, when you think of Raw, it's like, oh well, who knows what's going to be on the show, but now you know that, you know, there's a couple of interesting matchups. Edge versus Orton is always good. And now you know you've got the next installment of John Cena versus the Nexus, and this time it's going to take place in the ring. For those of you concerned that the Nexus looked a little weak here, I wouldn't worry about it, because I didn't think they looked that weak. You know, they were ran off by a large group of wrestlers, and yes, Cena got a little revenge on Darren Young, but my guess is that Nexus gets their heat back next week by roughing up Cena. It is the, this will be the go-home show next week, heading into the pay-per-view, so I don't know that they're going to lay Cena out and make it so he can barely compete. I mean, I guess they could, if they wanted to be, Sheamus retains the title in a cage and gives Cena that out. That might be where they're going, in fact, I don't know. But, I enjoyed the overall show, and I just, well, again, it wasn't this great, memorable Raw that we're all going to be talking about, but it was well done, and I just think that the Nexus angle has really breathed some new life into this show, because, yeah, you know, we were getting some, it was nice to see some younger wrestlers pushed. It's, you know, there was a time probably a year and a half ago where it was just like, God, would you push somebody other than Cena, Taker, Hunter, and the usual suspects, and WWE started to do that. But it still was like, you know, there was just something missing. It was kind of like nothing, you know, something on Raw didn't matter all that much other than, you know, well, it leads to the pay-per-view and okay. But now you've got this angle going. I think it is heating up. I think it has been well done. Yeah, there have been some, there have been some holes in the story along the way, without question. I thought last night they did a good job with it. You know, the week before I was really bothered that Cena and the other WWE Raw babyfaces didn't run out to make the save when the legends were being attacked. It's just like, okay, you're facing suspension, but you're more worried about being suspended than you are doing the right thing. That's one of those holes I'm talking about. I didn't care for that aspect of it. But I just think that they've done a really nice job overall. It makes Raw, I look forward to Raw a lot more right now with this going on and seeing how that next chapter is going to unfold than I was before Nexus showed up. I'm enjoying Raw more because of Nexus and this angle. And I think it really does finally stack the deck against Cena. You know, we always hear about how he overcomes the odds. Well, now, yeah, I mean, he's got some help from the Raw babyfaces, but one thing they did really well last night was pulling the heels out of that mix. I think that was a wise move because now at least the numbers are even. It looked kind of odd that, okay, so all of the Raw wrestlers want to kick the crap out of the Nexus. So now the Nexus almost looks sympathetic because the numbers are, you know, they're losing the numbers battle. A faction like that should win the numbers battle, and at least right now, you know, it's a little more even, if nothing else. And so the key, I think, again, was getting Wade Barrett back. That bodes well for this angle. Now, hopefully, someone in WWE will come to their damn senses, and they can get Daniel Bryan, a.k.a. Bryan Danielson, back into this thing at some point. We'll see where it goes. I mean, this thing is still very much in its infancy because we haven't even seen these guys wrestle since the Nexus was formed. They haven't actually been working matches on television. They're not advertised to work a match at the pay-per-view. Could Sheamus be the guy behind this thing? I guess he's a possibility. I get emails all the time. Could it be Hunter? Could it be Jim Ross? Could it be Shawn Michaels? Could it be The Rock? Could it be Steve Austin? The list goes on and on. I got to say, the emails can sometimes get a little repetitive, but you know what? It's good because it has people guessing. It's a good whodunit. And so I still think that, yeah, the email chime gets a little corny and whatnot, but I like that they're taking their time with the anonymous GM thing and stretching it out rather than just instantly giving it away. I do think it has people guessing, and as I've said from the start on this thing, they need to keep their finger on the pulse on this one. Gauge the crowd. Determine, okay, is the crowd now sick of this, where they're ready to move on? They don't even care anymore. It's getting so stale. They don't. You know, it's not like that. And they beefed it up last night with that tease for Austin. Maybe next week they can tease it's Rock. You know, they can keep messing with people and leave them wondering, leave them guessing a little bit and just pull the rug out from under them. I think it's going well. I think I've liked it from the start because it's something that they haven't done before. They're thinking outside the box. It's not just, one of the usual suspects is GM or even, you know, someone that you could, maybe they haven't done it, but it wouldn't be a stretch to see him do it, that kind of thing. You know, I like what they're doing with this. I also like that there's no guest host on this show. We've got Florence Henderson scheduled for next week, and at last check, she was the only guest host they have advertised. I don't think it's going away. I really don't think it's they're going to, you know, just give up on the guest host concept altogether. I think it's probably going to be a bi-weekly thing, or maybe even, you know, like I've been saying, just save it for when you have somebody that matters. You know, I don't know that Florence Henderson necessarily fits that description. With all due respect to Mrs. Brady, because how can you not respect Mrs. Brady? That would just be wrong. Sorry, it's just not a great mix. And I think those segments have killed Santino more than anything in my mind, because he's always involved with the guest hosts, and 9 times out of 10, his interaction with them is really lame. And so those are usually the comedy segments. I guess the one week we didn't get any comedy was with Rob Zombie, and it was quick, it was painless, and I liked it more than most people, because at least he was enthusiastic about it and didn't last forever, much like this audio is. With that said, again, if you want to, if you're interested in signing up for .NET membership, head on over to ProWrestling.net if you're listening to this on iTunes. Look in the middle of the page for the sign-up section. There are monthly and annual options available, and if you take the annual option, you can sign up for as little as $5.50 per month for ad-free access to the .NET website, and you can also correspond with other .NET members in the forum, and you'll get the first look at .NET news when there's breaking news, and all sorts of other perks, including tons of audio. And again, if this wasn't enough audio for you today, check out PW Torch Livecast at 4:30 Central on blogtalkradio.com. And then also I will be on BetweenTheRopes.com tonight at about 6:20 Central. But if you want to hear that show from the start, it begins about 5 o'clock Central. And I know Dusty Rhodes and Chris Sabin are both advertised for Brian Fritz's show. So until then, thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thank you for your support of ProWrestling.net. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.